connect them straight into action. Let's start the conversation. Let's set the ball rolling. Let me start with you, researcher Abdul Karim Ibrahim. Let me find out from you, Abdul. I just narrated what tested my faith in Ghana's justice system. It was sometime in 2015. I walked out of the Accra International Conference Center after watching Anasa's investigative piece on judicial corruption in the judiciary. And that really tested my faith. It shook it a little bit. Another time was with a friend. He came out of the court. He went to the court to witness a case against government official. He had anticipated that that government official was going to be jailed not less than, 10 years. Yes, that was his anticipation. But he came out and thought that that government official was given a slap on the wrist. And he compared that to people who, petty thieves, so-called, petty thieves, and said they probably would have gone to jail for, more years. Have you had any situation where your faith in the justice system was tested, where you were compelled to do an introspection of Ghana's justice system?
Well, on a personal note, Maxwell, I have not had any experience that has required me to reflect in that way. But of course, as we are citizens and we are all watchers of the space of Ghanaian institutions, there's a way that at the end of the day, we interact with social institutions or state institutions like the judiciary or the legal system in its totality. Mm. And as a result, we have either heard stories, seen the product of investigations, as you have alluded to, and based on many other engagements in one way or the other, including the subject matter before us currently, which involves the conduct of the Attorney General and the Minister of Justice of the Republic of Ghana, not him alone, but also a member of the Supreme Court of the Republic of Ghana. And I'm stressing on these portfolios and the individuals or the positions that they hold, because particularly of what it must embody, what it must represent for the collective values of the society that we are trying to build. Mm. And so, if I look at the conduct of these two gentlemen in the case that we have before us, I think that in itself is complete evidence of how, if you did not believe already that the system was not meant for any good, I think that they should lay some more emphasis and some more evidence for you to appreciate how corrupt, how devastating, and how unworthy and completely unethical a lot of the systems that we have are. And the actors who live within these particular spaces have conducted themselves, and the way that the general public really also reacts when these things happen. And as the conversation goes on, I will make some more allusions as to why exactly I find it completely scandalous that we have a Supreme Court justice involved in a matter like this, and somehow almost everybody has just completely put the other way around. And then we turn around and we are shocked about the horror that we see in our country. I have been overwhelmed, really, Maxwell, if I would sum up that we have been completely overwhelmed by how we have acted, especially in regards to this matter, and especially also on the moral and ethical lines.
So if I'm to make a deduction on what you're saying, you think that this is a significant litmus test for Ghana's justice system? Or you think that there's no case at all?
I think it's a complete blend on the entire institution. Mm. But the extent to which we have sort of not taken our attention there, and for me, the fact that we haven't also appreciated this and regarded it as scandal, a big scandal in that respect, shocks me. And for me, it just goes to also expose how completely flawed this system and institution really is.
Okay. Let's connect to George Poku. He's an accountant based in the U.S. George, you've heard Abdul Karim Ibrahim. He disagrees with opinions out there that we're blowing this issue out of proportion. He thinks that, no, we are not creating mountains out of a molehill. No, he does not think that we're killing an ant with a sledgehammer. He thinks that this is a real significant, test for Ghana's justice system, one that is scandalous for that matter. You've had opportunity of living in Ghana and then in the US. I want to find out from your perspective, do you think really there's a case or there's no case at all?
There is a case, and unfortunately, Karim, I love you, and I've listened to you quite a number of times. There is a case, because again, what we are looking at is quite monumental, and what we are looking at is unprecedented, because again, not only is an attorney general being implicated in this, but the legal profession itself and the code of ethics that guides the legal system has been thrown out of the window. And I shudder to ask the question, where else do we go for any sort of explanation? The reason why I'm saying that is twofold. One, the judge that is sitting on this case has already stated categorically that she has listened to the tapes that were leaked. And after she listened to it, she didn't hear the attorney general make any suggestive statements. So one, she's already said that I have listened. Two, I have acknowledged that is the attorney general on there. Three, he did not make any suggestive statements. But the main ethos of the issue is the fact that the attorney general was talking to an accused person without the lawyer being present, which is against any legal rules that in the U.S., in Ghana, is established that you cannot talk to somebody without legal representation being there. So if that alone does not cause anybody to skip a heartbeat, then we are heading towards a place that there is a point of no return. Secondly, the case by itself, the weight of it and things like that has defied any legal situation that Ghana has ever seen before, whereby there was clear evidence of the attorney general talking to somebody that is the accused and having a conversation without their legal representation, and we think that it's okay to go with it. How do we set this precedent for the rest and the entirety of our legal system, whereby it is now okay for an accused to be interrogated by another lawyer, be it the attorney general, not the attorney general, whoever is the lawyer is, without their legal representation being there? That, I think, is the crux of the issue that we are overlooking. The law is clear on that part, that you cannot talk to an accused person without their legal representation being there. And it has happened. There is clear evidence of it. And what Judge Sewa said yesterday or 2 days ago is a clear indication that she said she's listening to it. The attorney general did not make any categorical statement to the accused, to work with him, to accuse the first accused. But again, accepting the fact that you've listened to the tape, secondly, knowing that it's the attorney general's voice you have listened to, thirdly, accepting the fact that the attorney general spoke without the legal representation of the man that you are speaking to, and still thinking that that is not a mistrial, I seriously don't know where our legal profession is going to right now.
Judge, let me find out from you. Here in Ghana, opinions are divided on the matter. There are those who think that there's no case at all, and there are others who think there's a case. Let me find out from you, in the U.S. where you live right now, what do you think would have been the reaction to this?
This, if it had happened in the U.S., was going to be an instant mistrial, and the DA, the district attorney, or the whoever within the the state that was prosecuting would have to re-prepare their case and resubmit it. Mm-hmm. But it is instant mistrial, because so many laws have been broken by the prosecuting side that there is not even something for us to discuss as to whether or not the case needs to go on. Mm. It is only in Ghana that I know that they can say that there is no reason for a mistrial. Because at the end of the day, what law is
the Attorney General are going to transfer to. I know he was told to recuse himself. He said he was still going to prosecute and things like that. But again, the fact that we are even asking him to recuse himself based on the information that is happening right now is even abnormal. Look at Trump's case. Fannie Willis and him and her having an affair with the prosecuting guard. Now the case has been dismissed indefinitely. Because again, the rule of law works here and the legal system works here.
Okay.
It was just a man and a woman having a consensual affair, but the fact that they were prosecuting a case together and they were having that amorous relationship has gotten to the place whereby the Georgia system has thrown the case out, not totally, but it has been suspended indefinitely for them to go and regroup and come back. How do we get here within the legal system of Ghana that there is clear evidence that this has happened and we say, que sera, sera, what will be, will be. And for that reason, nothing is going to be done. We are saying this is not a test, a litmus test for our legal system. Again, every law student knows that you quote a previous case because the precedence has been set on that previous case for you to argue your case forward. For that reason, what is being done right now is setting the precedent that lawyers, in as much as within the code of ethics, cannot talk to clients without their lawyer being represented. If this is allowed to fly, then I can quote this if I am a lawyer in court and say that based on the declaration made in Atuforsen versus the state, I can talk to somebody who is not my client without representation and nothing can be done.
I'll come back to you, George. But let's come back to Ghana. Let me connect. Danny Obin is connecting. Danny, he's a law student. He's a student of law, and he's joining us right now. Hello, Daniel.
I can hear you perfectly.
Great. Danny, you've heard from Abdul Karim Ibrahim. You've also heard from George Poku. They think that this is scandalous, and there's a big question that needs to be answered. I don't know what your views are, what you make of what Abdul Karim Ibrahim and George Poku, what you make of their positions on this matter.
Well, thank you very much, Karim. Sorry, Maxwell, and a very good evening to your listeners and to my co-panelists on the show. I've listened to them very, carefully. I've listened to the various, currents of opinion running in and around this particular matter. I think that, invariably, the legal system, as Karim has pointed out, is imperfect. It's imperfect as it comes. It's inherently imperfect. It has a lot of lapses, etc. In my personal view, or how I see this particular matter, I think that we cannot use that to generalize and say that, confidence has tanked, the judicial system is in a mess, etc. I do not think that this is a classical example of how Ghana's judicial system fails, because the matter at hand really is that the Attorney General is, being alleged to have engaged in improper conduct, contacting clients of the defense without their, defense counsel, amongst other things. I wouldn't really want to go into the merits of that particular allegation, because I think I'll leave it to the trial of fact if the defense wants to take it up and take it to the Ghana Legal Counsel as Justice Sewa Asare Butri directed, or whatever the case may be. I wouldn't want to go into that. But I'm saying that invariably in litigation, for example, these are incidental to litigation. These kinds of efforts by either party to try and gain an advantage to seek a certain end. In any case, what has Godfred Dame sought to do in this particular case? What is he fighting for? He's fighting to seek justice for the Republic. You understand? So within that context, I really cannot buy the wholesale argument that, look, he's employing rough tactics and therefore the judiciary is corrupt and is against the public interest, etc. I think that in the bid to seek justice for the Republic in good faith, I must say. You know, we cannot necessarily say that this particular incident speaks to how the judicial system of Ghana is failing. I also must point out on this particular score again that justice invariably in our setup is in the bosom of the judge. So insofar as we are not saying, for example, that the judge in question, you know, is involved in, you know, improper conduct, etc., I think there's a lot of fit in our judicial system, because if you look at the rulings of Justice Evia Selasa-Ibuchi in the particular application of all the four applications, this particular one, she's very candid on that it looks off, it could impact public confidence in the case, and therefore she advises that the Attorney General steps aside. I mean, if you look at this particular judgment and all the judgments of that particular judge, for example, you would see clearly somebody discharging her duty according to her oath, really, if you look at, if you read most of the judgments of Evia Selasa-Ibuchi. So my point is, if you look at where the bosom within which justice lies, I still think there's a lot of confidence, it deserves a lot of confidence, I must say, because the justice system as we have in Ghana, although inherently imperfect, is still very, very functional, and it's still very, very worthy of our respect and worthy of subjecting ourselves to, because we cannot say the Attorney General in one single case, I must say, has engaged in all the allegations of he engaging in improper conduct necessarily equates to the fact that the judicial system is in shambles. I don't think that things
are... Can I please pose
one
question?
You have an intervention. I want to go to Carla. Carla is also joining us. George, 1 minute, make your point, and then I go to Carla.
No, the question that I want to ask is, was there a reason why the Attorney General was not put on the stand under oath and questions being asked from the judge in relation to, were you the one on the call to dismiss any sort of erroneous opinion about who was or who wasn't? What he is saying, he's, as somebody being trained as a lawyer, he's skirting the lines. But I am saying, was there a reason why Gofedami was not put on the stand under oath and asked very specific questions rather than the very generalized solution that was provided? Are you the one on the call? If you were the one on the call, then you have gone against the ethics of the law profession. And for that reason, we stop there. We don't even go forward. If he lies under oath, then he's perjured himself and he's not worthy of continuing. At the end of the day, you asking him to recuse himself without asking these questions, I think you are not doing very, very good with the Ghanaian population and also with the legal system.
Well, okay. Maxwell, if I could respond to that particular score.
Okay, 30 seconds. Daniel, respond. Let me go to Carla. Yeah.
Yes, I think that she was very candid in stating that there may be questions as to the conduct of the Attorney General in that particular instance, but her forum cannot be the one to pursue that particular issue of improper conduct on the part of a member of the bar. She clearly referred the matter, or she advised that the matter be referred to the General Legal Counsel, etc. So she hasn't made a ruling on whether or not the conduct was proper, etc. She's saying that with my forum, this is not a matter that I can entertain. And she didn't ask the Attorney General to recuse himself. She merely advised that it would be in the interest of confidence in the case that he recuses himself. You understand? So I don't think we should convolute, you know, the matters. The judgment is very clear, especially on those parts. I don't think that we can import, you know, these kinds of things into the judgment.
Okay. Let me go to Carla now. Carla is a lawyer, and she is also connecting. Hello, Carla. Glad to hear from you. My question to you, first of all, would be, have you also had any reason to do a sort of introspection about Ghana's justice system? Have you had any reason to do that?
You mean regarding this case or in general?
Well, in general.
Good evening and good to be here, by the way.
Before this case, yeah.
No. I'm a lawyer, so obviously you do think all the time about, you know, justice and its impact on our society. So I do think about those things. In a more general sense, do I feel that Ghana's judicial system and administration of justice is in a crisis? No, absolutely not. There may be things that people are uncomfortable with, but they're you know, a lot of very hardworking stand-up judges, lawyers with a lot of integrity. So in a general sense, I would say no, I'm not concerned. Obviously, in a developing country, you know, the resources, the number of judges and lawyers, and as much as people think that there are not, there need to be more, there need to be better resources, there need to be more legal aid. But no, I don't think it's in a crisis. There may be individual cases that, you know, people have issues with, but no, I wouldn't say so.
Well, what
is this improvement?
Yeah, but well, what about this specific case?
So this case, I think, is a bit unfortunate, because I do agree with a couple of the previous speakers that, you know, the important thing about justice is not just that it is done, but that it is seen to be done. I mean, it's a cliche, we say it all the time. But the reason for that is for social cohesion, for faith in the system, for people to feel that if they have a problem, right, and they take it to the courts, they'll be treated fairly. And if, so whether it's a civil matter or whether it's a criminal matter, they will be treated fairly. And while I cannot speak to the details of this case, firstly, I'm not a trial lawyer myself. I'm not a litigation lawyer. I'm a corporate lawyer. But, you know, so some of the ins and outs of these litigation matters, I wouldn't pretend to be an expert. But I would say that it is important for justice to be seen to be done. And perhaps inevitably, because of the subject matter of this particular case, because of the people involved in the case, it's also very political. And so there's a lot of muddying of the waters. But I would say that the thing that alarmed me the most, like with previous speakers, was really that, you know, the whole point of having legal representation is that the legal system can be complex, confusing, and scary for people who are not lawyers or judges. So that is why you have legal representation. You have people who are trained, they're experts, and they're licensed to guide you through the system. And that's precisely why it is not appropriate for a counsel on the other side to contact somebody on the other side directly. And because there's an imbalance of power, so to speak. So your counsel should be there all the time. Mm. Now, I listened to that tape. Obviously, as we sit here, we don't actually know whether his lawyer was there or not during that conversation or other conversations.
Yeah.
But it is claimed by Mr. Jaffa and other people representing him that his lawyer was not. So, and this is not just any lawyer. This is not just any prosecuting counsel. This is actually the Attorney General of Ghana. So I would say for me, that is the most alarming thing. If indeed there are these conversations happening without Mr. Jaffa's counsel, I would say that that is something that would make me uncomfortable.
Okay.
And I think, you know, should make everybody uncomfortable if, okay, I don't know for a fact, but if that was the case,
okay,
because there's an imbalance of power.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Carla. Let me go to Abdul Karim Ibrahim. Abdul Karim Ibrahim, you've heard from George Poku. You've also heard from Carla. You've heard from Daniel Bain. Do you believe that the justice system, as we have it now, is free from political influence in handling cases involving, you know, government officials? Some people think that, look, we just playing the ostrich and pretending that these things do not happen. Do you think that the justice system is actually free from political influence in handling cases involving government officials, especially of the opposition?
Yeah, so it's obviously a very difficult question to answer, Maxwell. And I say so because the way that it is framed would also mean that if one said yes, they would do the conversation good if they were able to provide some specific evidence or instances like that. And, you know, those are extremely difficult to do.
Mm.
But if you want to still get my assessment of the system, whether or not it is independent and free of political machinations and influence,
yeah,
and all of that, then the way that I would look at it is to again come back to this simple matter that we have before us, right?
Yeah.
And the way that the matter is conducted, there are two ways that we can look at this. One, obviously, to look at the court processes itself and look at, say, from the perspective of a judge, and I hope you enjoy the beautiful but birds crying where I am currently. But
yeah,
aside from that, it's also look at the conduct of the individuals that we are looking at here what it means for public institutions and the trust that Kara talks about, right? And for me, that is where you can do a proper assessment of whether or not there is any influence whatsoever. In this particular case, it is hard to conclude that there's any political influence in terms of how the judge is going about the case. I think that the actual merits of the challenge, the contestation that is happening within the processes as we know in law, could be such that anybody at all, even the person who confesses in court that they are guilty, they have every right to fight to the hilt, right? So I think that that process is not really the biggest preoccupation for us when we are having public discourse and we are trying to assess issues of governance, accountability, transparency, and all of those things. It is to look at the people who are embodiment of the institutions that we are talking about. And that is why I have a challenge with the way my very good friend, I got to realize later when he was speaking, Daniel, makes this about the law. This is not a legal question. Yes, a simple scenario for everybody who sort of somehow does not understand what is going on. So we have a situation where someone has allegedly engaged in a certain crime. They are before the court being tried in this particular instance. And then the person who has the power of the state to try the case has been called by one of the most respected judges in the country, who happens to be a member of the Supreme Court, and told them to come home, let's have a conversation. He goes there, and somehow the person who is accused, being a nephew or a cousin of the Supreme Court justice, emerges in the room, and the conversation turns out to be about what we can do for my cousin. I don't know how, after this, this country is not calling for the help of the Attorney General and the Supreme Court justice. There could be no other way to think about this. And again, if the General Legal Counsel, the Ghana Bar Association, the Judicial Council, the Supreme Court itself, and the president who appoints the Attorney General, if none of them have thought it wise that this is an unacceptable conduct, and so these people must go, then clearly it is a verdict on the states, on the values, on the systems of the judicial system, the legal system, as we are talking about it. This cannot seriously be an institution that you must take very seriously. It's a joke.
Okay.
And I think it is very obvious. So let's not even skirt around this problem and keep asking ourselves whether or not political influence is there. I mean, the president doesn't appoint all the people in the Supreme Court or nominate them to the Supreme Court for nothing, right? There's an active interest in that. And I've had countless cases, right, of allegations by people and all of them. If you don't believe any of them, this is a true test case to ask yourself whether or not we are serious. And anybody takes whatever is happening very seriously at all, Maxwell.
Interesting. George, let me come to you. You've heard Abdul Karim Ibrahim. He thinks that, certainly there's some level of political influence in handling cases involving government officials, especially those of opposition. The NDC did not mince words at their press conference. They actually said that they think that this is political persecution. They think that the current government is witch hunting their members of the opposition. Let me find out from you also, do you think that the justice system is free from political influence?
No.
Or you think it is not?
I definitely don't think it's free from political influence because, again, underline the word they use, persecution. The reason why I think this is persecution is when you start going behind and start digging into the details of this matter, you are taking somebody to court for causing financial loss. That means the country has lost money. The country has financially been bereft. But there has been instances whereby it is clear and it has been noted from the foreign partners that sent the ambulances to Ghana, saying, we are willing to give you your money back. Send our default ambulances to us. We will take it, and whatever we do with it, whether we are going to cook with it, whether we are going to break it up and use it for scrap, that is not your issue. But we will make you whole as a country. You gave us 2.3 million euros, we will give you your 2.3 million euros back. But the Attorney General said no to that and is still trying to get somebody to go to prison for that. That is persecution. That is not prosecution. Again, let's look at the facts and not be partisan about it or anything of that sort. So with that, that tells me that there is more political inclination to this particular case than it is about simple common sense. Because if I have lost it as a businessman, if I lose $100,000 and you come back to me and you say, hey, I'll give you $100,000 back, I will be quick to go and take my $100,000 back before you change your mind.
Okay.
That in this particular dispensation, they are not worried about getting the money back, but they are worried about trying to pursue a case, okay, which becomes the persecution rather than the prosecution.
Okay, Judge. Judge, I'll come back to you. Let's connect with our listeners. Let's hear what they have been saying when we come back. Then we hear from Carla and then we hear from Daniel. But it's now time to hear from you. My colleague Michael Papani actually joins me in the studio right now with your messages. We've had a lot of them coming in thick and fast.
Yeah, Maxwell, quite a lot of them from different backgrounds. That's exactly what I like from the messages that we are getting. Let me take you all the way to Tamimu, who is texting us from Boko. He says, I lost confidence in the current judicial system, especially how he was persuading a witness to fake an excuse duty as evidence in court. Remember, even the Honorable Albert Kandapa, the Minister of National Security, ever said the courts favoring government is a threat to national security. Well, Maxwell, let me take you to Justice, and he says, well, it's funny, his name is Justice. Mm. So certainly the justice system, certainly the justice system in Ghana cannot be trusted. With all that conversations between AG and Japa, I'm also planning to meet some things and to meet a Supreme Court judge. Come on, something fishy is going on. Maxwell, this one here says, from Max Foster in Amasama, says AG must face the law or he should vacate his office. And then all the way to Manchester in the United Kingdom, this one says, the case has dented my faith in the judiciary to the core. Well, I'm not sure if Ahmed said, I'm not sure if it's in a Ghanaian judicial system or the judicial system in the UK, but I'll be glad to hear from you what exactly that will be. Max, you have some of those messages. I sent some of those to you. Interesting one.
Yes. This one here says, certainly the justice system in Ghana cannot be trusted with all that conversation between AG and Jackpot. I'm also planning to meet a Supreme Court judge. Come on. Something fishy is going on. And this one is coming from Comrade Issa Tanimu in Boko. He says, I lost confidence in the current justice system, especially how he was persuading a witness to fake an excuse duty as evidence in court. Remember, even the Honorable Albert Kandapa, the Minister of National Security, ever said, quote, the courts favoring government is a threat to national security, unquote. Okay, so this one here is coming from Foster from Amazon, and Foster says, AG must be made to face the law or he should leave his office. This case, okay, yeah, so yeah, that's it.
Well, let me bring you this one from Joshua from Winneba. He says, how can my boss sanction an authorization to buy something that's a problem and I'm facing trial alone? Well, I don't get it. Well, as for the state attorney, the advice must be for his own good. Thank you, Josh, for that one. Francis in Accra says, ask the one opposing to the issue if he is the one injustice is done against. Like Atuforsin, will he be saying what he's saying? Well, that's what Francis is asking. I'm guessing he's sending that to Daniel. I guess that. So, Maxwell, these are some of the messages that are coming in. Some more are coming in. Unfortunately, you may not be able to read all of those, but we really appreciated that you are able to engage with us every now and then. We are really grateful that you come to us here. Maxwell, I'm pretty sure that some of your guests on the phone have some more to say to you.
Okay, great. So let's thank you, Michael Papani, Ashley, for bringing us what our listeners are saying on social media, those connecting with us on social media. But I still have Daniel. Daniel, before I go to Carla, you've heard from Abdul Karim Ibrahim, you've heard from George Poku also. Do you believe that the justice system is free from political influence in handling cases involving government officials, especially officials from the opposition, especially people from the opposition?
Well, thank you very much for the question, Maxwell. So the question specifically is that do I think the justice system is free from those kinds of influences?
Exactly.
I think that invariably, if they are within the spheres of influence of all the interests that, you know, pertain in our polity or our country, then necessarily they are subject to these kinds of influences in one way or another. That is a generalized or like writ large what I would say. But in this specific instance or in specific instances, that is when, you know, we are at a loss as to what exactly is happening. Is it politicians influencing the judge or this influencing that, etc.? So from that particular point, away from that general sense, we enter into speculation, conjecture, etc. That's why I'm very careful in entering, you know, those kinds of, you know, conversations or, you know, lending myself to those kinds of commentary, etc., because invariably we won't have anything concrete to base our, you know, comments, etc., on. Yes, they are, you know, products of the influence of the country. Judicial notice, even in, you know, deciding cases, etc., is taking of the mood of the of the case, etc. Those things could affect outcomes of cases. So yes, cases are or judges are under those influences in a general sense. But as to whether or not they are influenced directly by politicians, and in a sense, I get you're asking maybe a politician can call somebody to do this or do that. That is something that I don't have any evidence of. It's not something that I think, you know, is in evidence at all. Yes, you can have a general sense that that might be the case, and I've already said that they are not, you know, immune to this type of influences. However, on the case by case basis, especially with the case you are dealing with here, you cannot pinpoint, you know, any particular interest group or any particular, you know, faction having an influence on the judge where the justice will meet from, etc. So I wouldn't be able to say for this particular incident. As I said already, I think it's in the hands of a very serious and a very competent judge. Okay. That will deliver justice for the people of Ghana and for all the parties involved.
Okay.
But as to whether or not the justice system is free from these influences, I don't think so generally, because they're a product of our society.
Okay. Okay, okay. So Daniel does not think so generally because they think they are products of a society and by extension, a reflection of the society. Carla, you've heard from Daniel. What measures do you think are necessary to restore public confidence in the justice system following these allegations, especially for those who think that it's a significant litmus test for Ghana's justice system? In what ways do you think the justice system can demonstrate accountability and transparency during during high profile trials, not specific to this one? Oh,
sorry. Leading question, because yeah. When you asked me initially if I felt that the general system was I didn't have faith in, I said I do have faith in the system. So therefore you asking me what measures should be taken to restore faith. I think it's parameters that I had not put myself in. Let me put it that way.
Okay, yeah. So it's a two-sided question. If you don't think that there's no case at all, if you do not think that,
I don't know. So what I do think. I think that the political parties themselves ideally should stand out, because you know, obviously the NDC released the tape. Hey, then the MPP now also had a press conference and you know, came out categorically stating that this tape is doctored with zero evidence as far as I've seen so far. So the political parties themselves, in my opinion, are playing a very large role in the public's perception that this this case is political. When you come to the actual judge and the administration of the trial, aside from, you know, what I've said, I do think that it is inappropriate for a counsel on other side, on you know, a prosecuting counsel, and particularly the attorney general, because of, you know, the power that he wields, to be meeting with an accused person without his counsel, if that is indeed what happened, I think it is, it's very inappropriate. I actually think, without knowing all the details of the case, that the judge, and as much as she dismissed a lot of the applications of Honorable Atuforsen, was quite courageous in advising the Attorney General to recuse himself. In other words, as I was saying, she's basically saying that for the sake of justice being seen to be done, it would be better for you to recuse yourself. I really don't see much evidence that the judge is a puppet on a string of, you know, the authorities. I don't see much evidence there. But I do think that in order for people to have confidence, I feel like a lot of the more powerful players really should stand back. I can understand why they're not standing back, but I think ideally they should.
Interesting one from Carla. Let me come to you, Judge. Judge, in wrapping up this conversation, you've heard from Abdul Karim Ibrahim, you've heard from Carla, you've heard from Daniel. What do you think should be the way forward?
He who comes to equity must come with clean hands. I think I am the only person that is not legally inclined in here. But that is one of the statements that I live by and I abide with. Right now, the Attorney General cannot tell me he is coming to equity with clean hands. The judge that is advising for him to recuse himself rather than saying, recuse yourself, I don't need to see you in my courtroom again, is not showing me they are coming with clean hands. We need to call a spade a spade. This is more political than it is legal.
Okay.
And so, if we are looking at the legal side of it, he has done one of the worst things that any lawyer can do.
Okay.
Contacting a client without legal representation.
Okay.
And for that reason alone, this trial should be stopped for them to get new set of people on. That
okay.
is all I can say.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, George. Abdul Karim Ibrahim, you heard from George.
Would you
call a spade a spade, not a big spoon? Your final words, Karim.
Yeah, I think also very quickly, in the light of that, I think we should also cease to make this very soft as to say that it's a case of an attorney general prosecutor meeting a client without the lawyer and all of that. It's grave, but I think it's far beyond that. This is a case of the prosecutor, who happens to be the Minister of Justice, conniving with a Supreme Court justice who do something about the case on behalf of a cousin of the Supreme Court justice. For me, I think that the scandal is very, very clear. We don't have to go around it. And the nature of this scandal requires for me, a way forward would be one. I think Justice Kolendi, who has been named in this matter, should do a press conference right in the front pew of the Supreme Court and explain to us why that conduct is acceptable of a Supreme Court justice.
Okay.
Secondly, the Attorney General should resign. If he won't resign, the President should sack him. The President obviously would not do that also. So what I think we need to do is, and especially for the rest of you as media people, is to mount the shame. When we meet him at the court, we should ask him questions about what he's going to do and all of that. We should put to him that he has violated very basic ethics and moral conduct as a person responsible for the justice of a country. And that, we think that is not good. And for that matter, we should move away from that because he undermines the trust and the confidence that we have in institutions. It's pretty simple. I like Justice Kolendi also very much because I think he's a very, very brilliant human being. But he must answer some questions. And if anybody at all can answer why a Supreme Court justice can call a prosecutor to ask them what they can do for their cousin on a matter that is in trial, then it is him. He's perhaps the most intelligent person around. And he can abuse some philosophical analysis as to why that is a very good conduct and we must accept it.
Okay.
Until he does that, I don't think we should turn away at all from this grave misconduct that we have seen from some of the most elite people from our institutions in this country, Maxwell.
Great. Want to say a big thank you to you, Abdul Karim Ibrahim. He's a researcher. He connected with us from Accra. You had accountant living in the US connecting with us, George Poku. You also had lawyer, Carla Olympio. And then you also had a student of law, Daniel Obain, also connecting with us on today's edition of Ghana Connect. My name is Maxwell Agbagba. The man up next, Andy Dusty. Ah, his nest with the library. You cannot afford to miss that. Enjoy. Good evening. Bye-bye.